Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast coming at you on a Monday after the Milwaukee Brewers salvaged kind of a shaky road trip. They won 2 of 3 in Cincinnati, one on Saturday and Sunday, convincingly so on Sunday, to get back to 500. This Brewers team has certainly not been at its best, but it is still hovering right there at 500. Maybe this is the week things turn around offensively. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. And on the other line, of course, is Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Journal Sentinel. Find all of his writing at jsonline.com. He covers the Brewers night in, night out. The Milwaukee Brewers big news this week. On Friday, they made a trade to try to shake things up a little bit. Their offense has been scuffling, and even their defense when it comes to shortstop, Luis Urias was just really struggling. He'd had a couple rough games in a row defensively, wasn't keeping up his end on offense. And so the Brewers traded for Willy Adames, a 25-year-old shortstop from the Tampa Bay Rays. They also got Trevor Richards, a right-handed pitcher, in exchange for a couple relievers who were having a pretty big role with Milwaukee this year, J.P. Fireisen and Drew Rasmussen. On the surface, that seems like a lot. Two major league guys going the other way to essentially shore up one position, to fix what's going on at shortstop. I don't know if, you know, you sit back and say middle relievers are still middle relievers. It's an asset that you can afford to part with if you're the Brewers, who had a lot of bullpen depth. But when you first heard of this trade, what was your initial reaction? And then as it sort of sunk in, did any of that perception change?
Well, I mean, my immediate reaction was I was surprised at how quickly they pivoted away from Luis Urias. And not because he wasn't playing poorly. He was playing poorly, particularly in the field. So that wasn't the part about it. They had just so strongly committed to him as their shortstop. And they went all in on April 6th when they traded Orlando Arcia to Atlanta, basically giving themselves no plan B at shortstop. And so they made Urias the shortstop. They made a big deal of saying, we think we need to give him a chance to be our shortstop. And then after a quarter of a season, gave up on it. And so that was the part. It didn't surprise me that they thought they needed somebody better. It just surprised me that they were so quick to give up on him.
Yeah, I feel that way as well. And on the other hand, David Stearns has been a guy who has admitted when things haven't worked out. You know, the Jonathan Scope deal comes to mind. I mean, Scope was with the Brewers until the end of the season, but they moved on very quickly. Last year we saw with Justin Smoke and Brock Holt, and again, it was a different environment because it was a 60-game season. You couldn't afford to give a long leash to guys who were struggling. But they basically said they have to move on. And with Keston Hira this year, I mean, maybe for some fans it seemed like forever before they finally sent him back to AAA to work on some things. But, you know, they acknowledged they can't stick with a guy who's just struggling at that level. I'm not sure if it got to a point where it seemed like Urias had the yips. Yips is probably too strong, but just really wasn't confident defensively. The ball would come to him. It became an adventure right away. For a team that has built itself on pitching and defense, it seems like it's pretty important to have a shortstop that is shorthanded. And it does seem like Willy Adames is about as good defensively a shortstop as they could get their hands on. I mean, that's a guy who's probably even a little bit better than Orlando Arcia. I know a lot of fans are kind of miffed that Orlando Arcia is gone because they clearly needed a shortstop. But it seems like he's as surefire defensively as really the Brewers have had in a long time. You know, maybe even going back to Alcides Escobar, right?
Well, it's a mirror image move to signing Colton Wong. You know,
right.
That was done because Keston Hira had been a liability at second base. They needed a first baseman. They moved Keston Hira to first and signed Colton Wong, and it made their defense immeasurably better. And then also, you know, adding Jackie Bradley Jr. to the mix that was to an already very good defensive outfield. So they definitely... they definitely went for run prevention over the winter. And so a shortstop that can't throw the ball to first without making it into adventure is totally contrary to that. So I look at the trade for Willy Adames as the complementary piece to signing Colton Wong.
Adames had a two-run single as well, made a nice defensive play, also had an error on Sunday, and we'll talk more about that Sunday game. That was a big moment for the Brewers for a couple of reasons, but do you think, I know there are, again, people are bummed out that they traded Orlando Arcia when they did, because now clearly they could have used him again. I don't know if I feel as if, I mean, David Stearns talked about how they were talking to the Rays about Adames even going back to before the season. It's not like Orlando Arcia was lighting it up, right? I mean, I don't know if that's the answer to this. I kind of think the Orlando Arcia trade, maybe it doesn't happen if Urias struggle. They know Urias is going to struggle, but also maybe it still does. Like, I don't know if Orlando Arcia is the answer here. I feel like Adames is a much better upgrade than what they would have had if they'd gone back to Arcia.
Yeah, I mean, people that want to make this about trading Orlando Arcia are just totally missing the point of what was going on here. He had been a disappointment offensively and defensively at times as well. And that's why they pivoted to Luis Urias. You know, that's the fact that if Orlando Arcia had not been disappointing to them at shortstop, they never would have traded for Luis Urias with the intention of making him their shortstop. So we sort of need to understand what led to what here. You know, it's the trade of Orlando Arcia did not make them vulnerable at shortstop. Luis Urias's defensive mistakes made them vulnerable there. So, I mean, Orlando Arcia, is still playing in AAA. Atlanta's found no reason to bring him up. So, I know Orlando Arcia was a favorite player of a lot of people and deservedly so. He's a really nice kid. Always went out and hustled. He just could never live up to being the number one prospect in the organization, which he was before he came up to the big leagues. And so I don't know if Luis Urias also chafed under expectations. You know, some guys, things just don't work out for him. He had, from the very start, almost his time with the Brewers was sort of doomed. They trade for him. He breaks the hamate bone in his left hand in winter ball shortly before spring training. Misses all of spring training. Then when he's finally ready to get back on the field right at the end of spring training, COVID shuts him down. Everybody goes home. When they regather in Milwaukee last July, he tests positive for COVID and misses that camp.
Yeah.
And so he's been playing from behind from the very start. And he also strained a hamstring in camp this year, missed 2 weeks, and was playing catch up from that. So, just things never went smoothly for him. But having said that, they still committed to him at shortstop. You know, he made 7 errors in 3 games. So it's not really true to say he was bad from start to finish. He made 9 errors. He made 7 of them in 3 games. But 4 of them were the last 2. You know, I'm not sure how far they ever got on the Willy Adames trade talk prior to this year. David Stern said they had talked about him in the past with Tampa Bay, but they sure did accelerate those talks after Urias made 4 errors in a 2-game span. So the timing, just don't even try to tell me the timing was coincidental, because of course it was not.
Right, and you wrote about how Urias is handling it, and it sounds like he's handling it well, but he's still 23 years old. Right. They're not like throwing in the towel with him. Maybe he develops back into what they hope he could be. But I'll point out, and I'm sure a lot of people remember this, there was some doubt about his ability to play shortstop every day when they got him. It was more, he was seen as maybe more of a second base fit, and obviously right now the Brewers have their second baseman with Colton Wong, so putting him in a utility role, yeah, that's a good way to keep him around, and hopefully he builds some of that prospect shine back up, or whatever it is, the confidence, whatever it is that he's been missing right now. But, it's not like you could put him over at third base and feel 100% comfortable that he's a guy who could do that. He could fill in from time to time.
Right.
But I don't know utility, if that's like a long-term future for him. I think if that's it, then the Brewers might end up cutting ties with him at some point, but he's still 23. Like, this could still totally work out. He's got 5 home runs. It's not like he's overmatched all the time. It's just that, he just hasn't been consistent at the plate or, like you're pointing out, or in the field.
Well, he almost needs people to get hurt, to give himself another chance. Now you got Wong, an everyday player at second, and Adames, an everyday player at short. How much time is he going to see there? May occasional start here and there, and this is barring injury. So you almost need somebody to get injured, and that, and you don't ever want that to be the way you get your opportunity. I guess if Travis Shaw goes into a deep slump and he's been skidding a little bit lately, they could just let Urias try to take that job over at third. But I don't know that he profiles offensively as a corner infielder. So, there's no other way around saying that when you have a guy who's considered a top 50 prospect in all of baseball, you trade for him with the intention of making him your shortstop. And then in very quick order, you give up on that and say he's now a utility player. There's no way around saying on the fact that they devalued him. He's devalued as a player now. Utility player is not even close to the same as an everyday shortstop. So to have him as a utility player, he's devalued now, even at age 23, unless somebody gets hurt and he breaks through and plays great. I wrote in my column this morning that probably be better for him to go to Nashville and play every single day at second and short. Just let him all, they just released D. Strange Gordon down there because I'm guessing he opted out because he didn't think a whole lot of that Willy Adames trade.
Probably not.
As far as his future in Milwaukee, of which he then had none. So, just send, you can't put the kid on the bench, and then if someone does get hurt in 2 weeks, you say, okay, go be an everyday player after he's been on the bench all that time. So, I wrote that they should send him to the Nashville, let him play every day down there at both second and short, and maintain at least the appearance of being a regular player.
Yeah, I think that's a really smart way of looking at it. The old adage goes, you never want to trade with the Tampa Bay Rays. They always seem to find gold and everybody else's straw. And it's not like Firehisen and Rasmussen were struggling. I mean, they maybe weren't quite as good. Firehisen lately had, sort of lost the magic that he had through the first month plus of this season. He was about as good as anybody for coming out of the Brewers bullpen, Wisconsin kid, and seemed to be kind of a cool find. He'd struggled in a couple recent outings, but already has his first major league save with the Rays, has pitched pretty well in two outings with them already, of course. And Rasmussen was sort of the guy on the rise, hadn't quite hit his stride yet, but a guy that I know they were very excited about. How do you feel about the return? I mean, that's a lot because those are two major leaguers who are contributing today and not old major leaguers, guys who could contribute down the line, but it is still middle relief at this point. It's still relievers. The Brewers do have a lot of them. It seems like that's the strength they should have dealt from. I mean, that's absolutely the type of move they should have made.
Exactly. You trade from strength. You trade from weakness and you get yourself in real trouble. Well, they got a 25-year-old shortstop that's not even eligible for arbitration until after this year. So, in their mind, they have their shortstop now. So it's not easy to find everyday shortstops. The question is if he'll hit enough to make them want to keep him their everyday shortstop, we'll see that he was not hitting well this year. I don't think Tampa Bay is a great place to hit. But that thing you said about Tampa Bay usually comes out ahead in trades, they already have in two previous trades with the Brewers. The Brewers traded G-Man Choi to him, who's still their first baseman 3 years later, to get Brad Miller, who they released after 6 weeks. And he's played way better since then than he played for them those 6 weeks. But still, that didn't work out. And then they traded another first baseman, Jesus Aguilar, who now is leading the National League in RBIs at Miami. Tampa, did not keep him. But the Brewers got Jake Faria, who made zero impact with them. So, Tampa Bay does have a knack for doing better in trades. They are very astute evaluators of talent down there. And it's why they can every year have the second or third or first lowest payroll and still go to the World Series. They do more with less in terms of money commitment than anybody. For them to give up on Adames, a red flag goes up right there to me. But they do have the number one prospect in all of baseball, Wander Franco, and a whole bunch of other prospects too. So they were also dealing from a place of strength. And so they obviously thought they needed help in the bullpen more than being not able to cover themselves at shortstop, which they think they can. So I think both teams dealt from a position of strength. Baseball is a bullpen game now. So the Brewers are probably going to get Eric Yardley back. They hope he has to pitch more like he did last year and not this year. I don't know if Topa's gonna get over his injury this year and pitch for him or not, but they'll just have to go find some relievers elsewhere if they find out that doesn't work. We'll see what this kid, we forget that they also got a relief pitcher back in that trade too, Trevor Richards. And he pitched two shutout innings today at right exactly the time they needed it in that game. They miraculously played a game today that they did not have to win by one run. I mean, you need the Hubble telescope to find the last time they won a game by more than one run. They just, and we talk all the time about they get beat by big margins all the time, but they never win by a big margin. And it just makes them always have to use Williams and Hader every stinking time they win a game. And which means it's going to be hard to have a winning streak because you're going to blow those guys out. So every now and then they need to have what we call score separation. And today they finally had some score separation. They scored 10 runs last Sunday and still only won by one.
Yeah, and that was courtesy of some bad pitching from the opponent, a lot of walks, bases loaded walks. Today,
Yeah,
Sunday
they
was the first
actually.
time they really clicked it, you know?
The one thing that they should feel good about winning the last two games in Cincinnati is the Reds' offense has been far, far, far more productive than the Brewers, as has about 27 other teams. But the Reds are like up in the top five scoring. Baseball's so weird. So they had always been a team who could score, but they couldn't stop you from scoring. Then last year, they became a team that just absolutely shut you down with their pitching, but they had trouble scoring runs. And now this year, they're back to them old selves again. Pitching struggling with the hitting's tremendous. So especially Babe Winker, you know.
Jesse Winker, five home runs in that series,
I
something
mean, come
ridiculous.
on.
But if you had said, okay, the Brewers lost the first game, oh, and they have to face Sonny Gray and Luis Castillo in games two and three,
Yes,
you would have got.
two guys who have owned them. Those guys. Now something's up with Castillo this year.
Yes, something's wrong. You're absolutely right.
He's just not pitching good, and Gray's not like he used to be. Both those guys used to be sub two ERA guys. Yes, okay, but you know what? We've seen a lot of shaky pitchers mow the Brewers down this year because their offense has been so bad. We got to the point where you had to ask counsel, do you think that pitcher was any good, or is it just your offense? I mean, it got hard to tell. It really got hard to tell. I mean, why is every pitcher against them Cy Young? Those were two good wins because they scored more than a team that's been scoring way more than they've been scoring this year.
Yeah, you go back to that Kansas City series earlier in the week, a couple pitchers that maybe most people haven't heard of, and they just, have their way with the Brewers, and the Brewers getting swept in KC and losing that first game in Cincinnati. Not what you want. But Sunday for me by far the biggest development was seeing Christian Yelich really swing the bat well. He did since we last podcast, he came back, did come back for that Royal Series, was a designated hitter, but had been 0 for 14 going into Sunday's game, I believe with seven strikeouts. I mean, he just kind of looked like the same guy we've sort of seen in 2020 and parts of 2021, where he's just the timing is off, it's just not the same guy. And then on Sunday, we saw a different hitter. We saw a guy who ripped the ball to the gap. It should have been a hit, extra base hit. Nick Castellanos made a great play. Credit to that. He gets an RBI single. He hits a home run for the first time in 2021. I mean, for me, huge sigh of relief because honestly, I was going to ask a lot about Yelich on this podcast about when we start hitting the panic button, because there's just a lot of bad signs that are just piling up and piling up. And then Sunday happened, and I know one game doesn't tell you anything, but man, I feel a lot better about Christian Yelich after watching him play one game than I had before Sunday.
Well, just a huge sigh of relief by everybody. The Brewers, their fans, Yelich himself, just a huge sigh of relief for everybody. I mean, sooner or later, you want him to start looking like the Yelich of old. What he was doing was hard, basically rehabbing at the big league level. I know he went down for three games in Nashville, but he didn't play any of those games all the way through. I think he only had like seven or eight at bats. Now all of a sudden, well, let's put it this way. And normally, when a guy misses the amount of time he missed, he goes down for quite a while on minor league rehab. But they just With his back, once his back started feeling good, they wanted him on their team, not Nashville's team. And it's hard not to endorse that line of thinking. So there's two things that people should feel good about. One, that his back, has not been has allowed him to play, a few games now without any ill effect, and that and now he's, he said today he just hasn't been able to get on time. When you're not on time, you always look bad, and so, I don't know how many guys he saw throwing 97 down in Nashville. Generally, when you can do that, you don't have to stay in AAA. You get invited to come play Major League Baseball. So I'm guessing he didn't see a whole lot of 97 down there. But it's like everybody does it up here. It's nuts how just, I mean, Joe Smith comes in. Who's Joe Smith? I don't know, but he's throwing 99. It's just, I mean, we're just in a crazy era of velo. And so it's easy not to be on time. So let's see if you can carry it on. Your counsel said that he's got some built-in off days this week because they just can't afford for him to have a setback with his health. So, somebody's going to go to a game in that San Diego series and buy a ticket, and Yelich isn't going to be in the lineup, and they're going to be PO'd about it. But that's just the way it's going to be for a while until they're sure he's okay.
Yeah, it'll just be so nice to see him hit a home run at American Family Field again with fans. They've been waiting to see that since 2019, and it would be nice to know that that guy is still in the building and still parking baseballs. Left-handed hitters like him should just destroy that field. And
Yeah,
I'm
he hasn't been cheered by fans at in Milwaukee since early September 2019,
yeah.
because he broke his kneecap on September 10th, didn't play the rest of that year, and then the 2 months he played last year, there were no fans. So, and his at bats in 2018 and 2019, nobody even went to the bathroom. They just crossed their legs and held it if they had to go, because you just didn't want to miss him, because he was in that the ballpark was called Miller Park back then, and I called him many, many times in print a Miller Park beast. I mean, he was go look at his home numbers. I mean, his overall numbers were great, period. But just look at his home numbers from 2018 and 2019. They are silly rotisserie league numbers.
Yeah, I think one memory I'm going to take away from those seasons, 2018, 2019, is just seeing Christian Yelich at the plate and hearing the pop and knowing, just knowing that he's got another one, he's got another home run. Seems like every time he came to the plate, that was a possibility, every single
And
time.
one of the main reasons he committed to them for the long term, other than $200 million, was that he really loved, he just loved the way he got loved back in Milwaukee in his first 2 seasons. He saw no reason to go anywhere else. So everybody's looking forward to the day. And we're inside of a month now, or right about a month away from 100% attendance at American Family Field too. So he's going to have everybody, a full house behind him, and that's going to be something. It's going to bring back some good. The first home run he hits, period, there will bring back some good memories. But the first one he hits with a full house,
It's going to be pretty special.
yep.
Break free from your webcam and start living life this summer with Milwaukee Sports and Social. Milwaukee Sports and Social is a brand new recreational co-ed softball and kickball league for the city of Milwaukee that's designed to help you and your friends make the most out of summer 2021. Register as an individual or sign up with a few friends as a partial team. Milwaukee Sports and Social will then fill out your roster with fun Milwaukee locals who you can have a great summer with. Registration is only $99 per person, but listeners can take $5 off their registration with code BASEBALL at checkout. Start enjoying your social life again. Register today at MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. That's MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. So his trip to Nashville was more of a rehab variety. Keston Hiura's is more of a different kind of rehab, I guess. And so far, so good. He's looked really, really good hitting for the Nashville Sounds. He hit his third home run. It was the only run of the game on Sunday for Nashville. So that puts him at 14 for 32. He's hitting .438. He's got six doubles, three bombs. He struck out 12 times. He's still striking out. Four
Right.
walks, though, seven driven in. I mean, he got that sort of week off to clear his head, and he's gotten right back into the swing of things. And there are a lot of players who have success at the AAA level, and that can't translate to the big league level. So, and again, small sample and all, I'm not suggesting that he's fixed or anything like that, but for a team that needs offense, it would strike me that maybe his stay down there is going to be pretty short. I don't know if they feel that they really need to commit to a longer term thing with him in Nashville, but honestly, I find that unlikely. You know, I mean, it's not, Daniel Vogelbach is okay, but they could do a lot better at first base, you know, offensively. And I feel like Keston Hira's days down there might be numbered. Do you think I'm right, or you think
Well, it's definitely numbered.
Yeah,
it's definitely numbered. Just what is the number? But I know what you're saying. You think it's a low number?
I
think the more he hits well and the more they struggle, the number goes down. You know, because it's the same thing about only keeping Yelich down there for three games. You don't waste your bullets down there. You want them fired up here. So I do think the more he hits and the more they struggle, the shorter he'll be. But I do think they're going to give him some time so that it's not in anybody's mind, but particularly his, that it's too small of a sample size to believe in. You know, you want to be able to believe in him a little bit. But it fits way better in their scheme to have a right-handed hitting first baseman than it does lefty, because now when they face a lefty, they always have a lefty play first. You know, it's either Vogelbach or Shaw, you know, and so it fits better for them for that first to have a right-handed hitting first baseman when they face lefties. And another thing that could make your prediction true that the number is going to be short is I believe they have a bunch of lefties coming at him. So he's going to match up. I got to take a good look at their matchups, but I think I do remember Council saying they had a bunch of lefties coming at him with San Diego and Washington. So maybe that's going to be good enough. You know, maybe they're going to say, let's get him up now and have his right-handed bat against him. But they'll hate themselves if they bring him up too soon. He has over 10 with 8 strikeouts, and they have to send him back down. They can't send him back down. You know, that would be just a crushing development. And so it was like when Yelich came off the IL and only lasted one game. That was crushing, you know. And I wrote, the next time he comes off, he has to come off to stay. He cannot come off for 1 or 2 days and go back. So, and so far, so good on that.
Yeah, the Brewers will open that four-game series against the lefty Blake Snell, pitching for the Padres, opening a four-game series at American Family Field. I don't know too far beyond that. I know Musgrove and Paddock are pitching, so that's a couple righties. But like you said, you know, there's one more San Diego game. And Washington will be in town for the weekend. Washington has struggled. I mean, the Brewers should be okay there, but you would have said that maybe against the Royals. There's no prediction.
Yeah, I mean, we need to see it. We need to see their offense get going before you say they're going to be okay against anybody.
Truly, yep, absolutely. One. On the pitching side, real quickly, Adrian Hauser he's kind of entered enigma territory in my mind. I think everybody's kind of waiting for that breakout. He's had some great moments still, even this year, but he's not missing bats to the degree he was a couple years ago when he really seemed primed to take that jump forward. And I don't know if that's a sort of a graduation to more of a fixed role as starter versus bullpen, but it's just a different pitcher. He's not throwing as much high in the zone. Contact is pretty easy to make against him, and at this point his numbers have kind of decayed a little bit. This team has a lot of good starting pitchers. I mean, Brett Anderson's been reliable, and then he got three studs pretty much, and then there's Adrian Hauser. And there isn't an obvious replacement for him. I don't know if his job's in jeopardy or anything like that, but what have you seen from him, and kind of, you know, how do you explain Adrian Hauser right now?
Well, it's hard to. Three starts ago in Miami, he pitched the best he's ever pitched, in my opinion. He was just electric. He struck out 10, and he's not even a strikeout pitcher. Miami's offense is pretty decent. He just totally put every pitch right where he wanted, and he either struck them out or they grounded out. I mean, they literally did not even have to have any outfielders in that game. And I think maybe one or two balls got hit out there. And I remember talking to him after the game and saying, do you think this is the best game you've ever pitched? And you know, he bought into it to some degree. I know that. And so, you know, it had the feel of one of those corner-turning outings, you know. But, you know, when he turned the corner, a bus hit him, you know. So, you know, two bad outings since. So it's hard to, you know, last year he had so many outings like that. considering how short the season was, where he just got stuck in an inning and couldn't get out of it, you know. And the one of the major differences between Woodruff this year and Woodruff last year is Woodruff every now and then last year would get stuck in an inning and not be able to get out. He doesn't get stuck anymore, you know. He just doesn't get stuck, and that's one of that to me. That's a major difference in him from last year and this year. So we'll see. I mean, I do think he has a long leash because I do think they want him to be one of their starting pitchers. I mean, they
For
really
sure.
want him to be. And the fact that he got another chance this year after being not very good last year shows you that. So, but why he's so erratic, I don't know. And so we'll just have to see. I don't think he's in danger of losing. You know, they actually need six more than more than five. So it's not like they could take him out and replace him and be fine because they're starting another stretch where they're probably going to use six pitchers a couple of times because they don't have an off day for a while. So they want to really protect their arms when they can. And so because you look at the difference between him and Peralta. You know, Peralta struggled today too, but he didn't give up that many runs, you know. So he still found a way to keep the game manageable, and Adrian's got to figure out a way to do that too.
Yeah, very comparable. I mean, Peralta, I think, is pretty erratic as a pitcher. You don't always know where the ball's going. It seems like he's effectively wild, whatever you want to call it, but he ultimately does settle down. He'll finish at bats with pitches low in the zone that no one can touch, and that's that. You know, like he's got out pitches, and a variety of out pitches that he can use, and that seems to be that's working for him. It's not always the most efficient, but Freddy Peralta is getting the job done. So
And
he's
he is moving he's trending in the right direction,
totally.
you know, and Hauser's not. So that's the difference between those two guys. I mean, Freddie's definitely moving forward, you know.
Yeah, a guy we thought might be the number six at the beginning of the year, and now he's like the clear number three. He's the third wheel in the triumvirate they have at the top of the rotation.
Well, yeah, they have three guys that when they're on their game, you don't want to be facing them, you know.
Exactly. Right. Going back real quick, mentioned the Arcia trade as being something you hear some grumbling about now that the Urias situation has been what it is. But even further back, although not much further back, you've got the Grisham trade, which has gotten relitigated quite a bit. And no, there's no question here. Trent Grisham, who has been awesome for San Diego this year, was very good last year and just downright awesome this year. It hasn't worked out. The Brewers traded Zach Davies, who is now with the Cubs, but was pretty effective for most of last year with San Diego. Zach Davies and Trent Grisham for Eric Lauer and Luis Urias. We talked about Urias. Eric Lauer has been okay. I think probably maybe a little better than we would have thought. But right now he's at AAA, and you see that, and you see Trent Grisham tearing it up. You know, I go back and I look at the situation the Brewers were in, and even though the players themselves have turned out probably not as Milwaukee would have hoped, the deal still makes a lot of sense to me. You know, they had Ryan Braun coming back for 2020. They had, you know, Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain. You know, they had three pretty, you know, guys that were pretty set, assuming they were healthy, which isn't a guarantee, but they had backups. They had Ben Gamel. Tyrone Taylor was still a possibility. He'd had a much better 2018 season than Trent Clark. And you know, or Trent Grisham, formerly Trent Clark. Trent Grisham was kind of a late bloomer, and he had that error in the wild card game, but he'd been solid. I just don't think that there was a guarantee that the Brewers were going to rely on him in 2020 and a chance to get a starting pitcher. This is before Corbin Burns had turned into a star. In fact, had really struggled in 2019. Before you get a chance to add to your rotation, and you get possibly the shortstop of your future with a guy in Arcia that's kind of getting phased out. I don't know. It seems like the right deal. It didn't work out because.
You mean Urias, not Arcia.
Yeah, sorry. Well, Arcia is the guy who's getting phased out. Urias is the guy who's
Right.
going to replace him. You know, like
Right.
it makes sense.
Right.
It hasn't worked out, but.
But now they've turned away from Urias, you know.
Right,
So
right. So it looks
they
bad now, but I still
yeah,
think the deal
well
made sense at the time.
they made the trade look worse by giving up on Urias so quick, you know. So it's a perfectly good trade for you if Urias does turn out to be your starting shortstop. He's only 23 years old. And Lauer, I think, still has a chance to pitch a lot for them in their rotation. So it comes and you know, they spun Davies around in the Yu Darvish trade with the Cubs. So it basically comes down to who won the Grisham versus Urias part of that trade. And right now it's decidedly San Diego. And the Brewers made it even more decidedly by d deciding that Urias, at least right now, is not their starting shortstop. So If it would have worked out like they thought it was going to work out, it would have been fine. And it's still, he's still young enough so that something else could happen, you know. So, but right now, I mean, they strongly pivoted away from him by getting Willy Adames. I mean, he's 25 years old. It's not like
Yeah,
they
you're right.
traded. It's not like they traded for a 30-year-old shortstop. It's not like they traded for Andrelton Simmons, and then we're going to work with Urias on the side and make him into a better shortstop, and then next year we're going to go back to him. You know what? They traded for a guy that, you know, looks like a keeper for a while.
Yeah,
So,
you're absolutely right.
but I mean, you can look at it as you can either look at it as negatively about why can't they make up their mind what they want to do, or positively in that they're not afraid to change something if it doesn't work. You know, so I mean, going before this year, the middle infielders were supposed to be Urias and Hira. You know, now it's Adames and Wong.
Yeah, things did change rapidly, but you're right. And they're still 500, like as bad as it has been, and it has been woeful on offense. They're a
Yeah.
500 team. They turn that around at all,
Excuse me.
they're going to have enough wins to compete for this division. So it's so frustrating, and yet they are where they are, and you can't deny that if they fit, get a little warmer on offense, they're probably going to be fine. Even if the pitching comes down a little bit, they'll be able to win, they'll be able to win enough to stay in this division race. So
Yeah, I mean, you just have to try not to go crazy over the amount of good pitching they've wasted already.
yeah,
You know.
exactly.
You focus on the fact that they didn't bury themselves and try to get over the fact that they've wasted way too much good pitching. It's just a hot mess that they have, I think, a losing record or 500 at the best in the combined starts of Woodruff and Burns. I mean, that's just outrageous that they haven't taken better advantage of the way that, I mean, Woodruff in his last three starts has given up one run, and one run, earned runs, three earned runs in like 24 innings, and he's 0-2 with a no decision.
Right. Just so frustrating. Anything else, Tom, before I let you go?
I mean, I think that's it. You know, it's they've got some things to be excited about now. They fixed shortstop, and Yelich, you know, looked more like Yelich today. So they do have some things to be excited about, but they got their hands full coming up with the San Diego Padres, that's for sure.
Yep, the team that they swept in San Diego, but I don't imagine it's gonna be quite as easy. I don't know if it was easy the first time, but that's a Padres team that is one of the best in the National League. So he is Tom Haudricourt. Find again everything he has at jsonline.com. We've got a Memorial Day sale going on right now. You're gonna want to check that out. Great deals. jsonline.com/deal. Check it out. It's gonna be. I think it's like $1 for 6 months or $3 for 6 months. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but it's awesome. You're going to want to check that out, and you'll keep up with the Brewers then the rest of the way here. Thanks, Tom, for joining us. We'll chat with you again soon.
Thanks, JR.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Thanks for tuning in to the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. My name again is JR Radcliffe. He's Tom Haudricourt. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.